Good afternoon. My name is Owen Egan, and I am the chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the commission's regular meeting of April 24, 2024. The public may listen to the meeting in real time by following the instructions listed at the top of the commission's meeting agenda currently posted on the commission's website. In addition, this meeting is being recorded in its entirety. For the benefit of the public, particularly those who may be listening to the meeting by telephone, I'll take a roll call so that the record reflects who is participating today. When I say your name, please indicate that you are present. Mr. Barry. Mr. Einhorn.
Here.
Mr. Farish.
Present.
Mr. Fuzeshi. Mr. Goldsby Wells.
Here.
Mr. Ganswin.
Here.
Mr. Hankins.
Here.
Mr. Streeter.
Here.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan. Here. Similarly, when the commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll. The first item is consideration of the minutes of the commission's regular meeting of April 10th, 2024. Do I hear a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the minutes of the commission's regular meeting of April 10th, 2024.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn.
Yes.
Mr. Farish.
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby Wells.
Yes.
Mr. Ganswin.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins.
Yes.
Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan. Yes. Passes unanimously. Next is we will consider the hearing officer's reports. I will call the docket. If you wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call it, and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called. First is docket number 2023-0220, Robert Cushman versus Jason Thode, Chief Police Department, City of Hartford, et al. Are you there, Mr. Cushman? Mr. Cushman, are you there?
Mr. Chairman, he's an attorney.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he's locked up.
Okay. Is there anyone here from the city of Hartford?
Not yet.
I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Streeter, seeing neither party present, I move it up for the hearing officer.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn.
Yes.
Mr. Farish.
Yeah.
Commissioner Goldsby Wells.
Yes.
Mr. Ganswin.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins.
Yes.
Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan. Yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0227, Nathaniel Clark versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Revenue Services, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Good afternoon. General DeAngelis from Barnhill.
Would you like to be heard?
No, the proposed order is acceptable to the department.
Is Nathaniel Clark here, please? All right, since Nathaniel Clark is not here and there's, the state of Connecticut is not objecting, I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, seeing that the complaint is not here, there's no objection on the respondent, I move it up to the hearing officer.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Farish?
Yeah.
Commissioner Goldsby Wells?
Yes.
Commissioner Ganswin?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0246, J.L. Campos versus Keith White, Chief Police Department, Town of Monroe, et al. This was a withdrawal. Is there anyone here on this matter? I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Streeter, this was withdrawn and dismissed. I move it up to the hearing officer's report.
Mr. Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Farish?
Yeah.
Mr. Goldsby Wells?
Yes.
Mr. Ganswin?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0256. Daryl Campos versus Chief Police Department, Town of Monroe, Police Department, Town of Monroe, and Town of Monroe. Is there anyone here on that matter? That was a withdrawal as well. I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, as of the previous case, withdrawn and dismissal. I move it up to the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hackett, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Farish?
Yeah.
Commissioner Goldsby Wells?
Yes.
Mr. Ganswin?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0259, Gene Farcelli versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, Your Honor.
Hi, I'm Assistant Attorney General Aza Mosley.
Assistant Attorney General Michael Lynch, representing the Commissioner, State.
Would you both like to be heard?
Yes.
And then counsel?
Yes, Attorney Thomas Langle on behalf of the complainant today. Couldn't be here and is very sorry.
Could you spell your name, counsel?
Thomas Langle, spelled L-E-N-G-Y.
Okay. All right, we'll mark that ready.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0484, Stacy Gravino versus Town Clerk, Town of East Haven, et al. That was a failure of the prosecutor. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, the complainant failed to appear. It was dismissed. I move adoption of the hearing officer.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Yes.
Mr. Gansman?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0502, Christina Giannetti versus Chief Police Department, City of Ansonia, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? That was also a failure to prosecute. I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Complaint failed to appear. It was dismissed. I move adoption of the hearing officer.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Yes.
Mr. Gansman?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, passes unanimously. Last but not least, docket number FIC 2023-0514, John DeLorio versus Executive Director, State of Connecticut, Connecticut General Assembly, et al. That was a withdrawal. Is there anyone here who wishes to address us on that matter? I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The parties reached settlements and the complainant was ruled dismissed. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call on those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Farish?
Yeah.
Mr. Goldie Wells?
Yes.
Mr. Gansman?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. All right. Before we consider these cases, I will ask the Executive Director, Colleen Murphy, to please make the usual announcements.
Sure. As the chairman indicated, these proceedings are being recorded in their entirety. There is no need to request a recording. We will put the recording on our website very soon after the meeting. If anyone has trouble accessing that, just let us know. And pursuant to our regulations, oral arguments 10 minutes per side, and I'll keep track of that for the court.
Thank you. All right, so calling docket number FIC 2023-0259, Gene Faricelli versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Energy and Environmental Protection.
Mr. Chairman, I'm
going to
recuse myself on this matter.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Blessing.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Before we begin, AAG Lynch, I just want to note for the record that you in the past have handled several real estate transactions for me in your capacity as a personal attorney. Those matters are long concluded. I don't see any conflict here, but I just want to put that on the record.
Does anyone want me to recuse myself?
No.
No objection, then I'll stay. I don't think there's any reason to recuse myself. So thank you. I think I can be objective. All right. Sorry. Yeah, please sit. All right. So just identify yourselves for the record.
Yes. Again, Attorney Thomas Langle on behalf of the complainant in this case, Ms. Jean Faricelli, who is not present at this proceeding.
Thank you for pronouncing that. Faricelli.
Faricelli, yeah.
Appreciate it.
Sorry.
Counsel, please.
Assistant Attorney General Ace Sweet, representing the respondents, the Commissioner of Energy and Environmental Protection, and the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm Assistant Attorney General Michael Lynch, also representing the Commissioner and the Department of Respondents.
Thank you. Attorney Mosley, Attorney Lynch, I don't know which of you would like to begin, but would you please begin?
You have to stand.
No, you can sit. Yeah.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
So the respondents are here today on behalf of our, I am here on behalf of the respondents today to object to the hearing officer's proposed final decision issued for this case on April 11th, 2024. And I urge the commission to vacate the proposed final decision and dismiss this complaint. I know that we were able to provide the post-hearing brief and the motion to dismiss that was submitted in this case previously. And I, just wanted to give some additional information just to point out for the commissioners. So quickly, the background on this is Jean Ferricelli is the wife to Joseph Ferricelli, which the Commissioner of Energy and Environmental Protection and the department has a longstanding Superior Court order that was issued in 2004. That court order prohibited any direct or indirect communication with Joseph Ferricelli and the department based on harassment of staff and contractors that were working on a remediation project on the property that is here, part of this case. So Joseph Ferricelli did attempt to modify that court order a few times. The latest attempt was in 2023. It was again denied by the court. Jean Ferricelli, who is his wife, requested documents thereafter from the department and was denied. So a complaint was filed with this commission and the respondents were required to respond here to the commission. The respondents also argue that the hearing officer erred in finding that Jean Ferricelli's request did not constitute indirect communication, and also that this is the correct forum to address this issue since the court order was correct. And when there is a decision to deny records, the Freedom of Information Commission is where a complainant must come to object to that denial. There was evidence presented at the hearing, which included testimony from my client, the respondent, and testimony from the complainant that showed how it was indirect communication and how Jean Ferricelli is acting on behalf of Joseph Ferricelli, which violates that order. There are a number of findings that are identified in the record showing substantial evidence that, again, these requests are actually prohibited indirect contact by her spouse. The hearing officer did indicate in paragraph 20, page 5, numbers 1 through 6, some of these findings. So I will just quickly point out a few that the significance of the court order is that it affords a sound legal basis for Deep's denial. That Deep reviewed the FOIA request and noted that complainant's December 2022 request was on shared letterhead, which included a home address and email for Mr. Ferricelli, as well as a website for Mr. Ferricelli. That Deep determined that the requests were indirect communication under the correct court order, that complainant's 5 FOIA requests seek documents about Tire Pond and concerning the properties that are subject to the 2001 judgment and the 2004 court order, that the complainant was aware of an October 7th, 2004 court order that prohibited Mr. Ferricelli from indirect contact, that Joseph Ferricelli was aware of the request, and that at least one of the complainant's requests was, again, on shared letterhead. The complainant also wrote to the commission, since my husband was being denied access to the documents regarding Deep's activities on his property, was one of the reasons she was asking for the information. the documents submitted to the commission by the complainant, that document, the complainant and her husband communicated by email about the procedure relating to the FOIA request. Based on this substantial evidence in the record, the hearing officer could have, and we argue should have, found that DEEP properly denied those requests. There also was a portion where the hearing officer noted that there should have been, that the respondent should have called Mr. Ferricelli as a witness. I would argue that it is improper to draw an adverse inference against us not calling Mr. Ferricelli. Joseph Ferricelli was aware of this case and he did not intervene. And based on the substantial evidence that was presented, our client didn't feel it was necessary to call Mr. Ferricelli. In conclusion, I would just request a finding that it was indirect contact under the Superior Court order and commissioner and correct, and the commissioner was correct in denying the request under the order. And if the commission does agree with the hearing officer that the Superior Court should have been consulted regarding Joe's violation, which was another point made, that, that Joseph Ferricelli, violation should have been brought forward in Superior Court instead of at this commission, that this commission would stay the final determination and allow us to seek that order in Superior Court. And finally, if the commission does decide to adopt the proposed final decision, that the commission would grant a stay of the proposed relief under Connecticut General Statute 4-183F. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, just identify yourself.
Yes, of course. This is, again, Thomas Langle on behalf of the complainant. And now we'd like to respond briefly to the arguments made by Ms. Mosley. I'm going to try to go in an orderly fashion, but one of the things that is being overlooked, in my opinion, is the simple fact that the complainant is Ms. Jean Ferricelli, not Joseph Ferricelli. And even though they are married, this is 2024, and she has a right to invoke the laws of this country, i.e. FOIA, on her own, of her own volition. She articulated that her property is at issue in the FOIA case, and that the property they're referring to that is owned by her husband, Mr. Ferricelli, I'd like to refer to as the litigation property. The litigation property has a long and complex and intricate history. And with all due respect, I think it needs to be separated out from the very narrow focus here, which is whether Ms. Jean Ferricelli has a right to these public documents. If you look at the standards under FOIA, there's no question that we satisfy those standards. And nothing that counsel has said today can, in my opinion, disturb that fact. In the 2011 or 2012 case, we focus on that prior Supreme Court decision. It's discussed at length in my brief that I submitted. This was a post-hearing brief submitted in the case, and we just submitted copies, the courtesy copies or the court copies to the panel here. And if I could call your attention to pages 10 through 12, that really is the crux of our argument, and I won't waste your time and repeat it here, but, it couldn't be any clearer that Ms. Ferricelli is not her husband, Joe. In this case, she's her own person. And she has articulated some real, consumer rights here that are at issue. She has tenants that are on her, what we call Parcel C. Parcel C is the complainant's property. And you'll see in pages 10 through 12 that I've referenced Parcel C. And Parcel C is not part of that litigation history. Because of that, we believe that the decision rendered, the proposed decision in this case is right on point, and it should be upheld on all levels. My client could not be here today. She was on a out-of-state trip with her husband. They're traveling. And she wants to thank the commission for their time and for their attention to this matter over the last few months. And she's very sorry that she could not be here. Thank you.
So if any of the commissioners have any questions?
I just have some statements.
Mr. Hankins.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Mr. Chairman, I have some statements, but I don't know if it's this time is the right time to state them, or I can do them later.
Your choice.
I'll do it now and throw it out there. I don't think that this issue or this case will be decided here, but rather, you know, on administrative appeal, either way that the commission decides. But this whole entire, I've read the briefs carefully as I can. I've read the decision, you know, carefully. It's a well-written decision, and I greatly respect the counsel who wrote it, but I don't agree with it. And I think the decision could have been written the other way. The whole case is rife with examples that this property was, you know, that the request is either direct or indirect, which is impermissible according to the injunction, the 2004 injunction. Respondents' counsel went over a few of these. I noted, for instance, the complaint is post-hearing brief on page 1. The complainant is seeking crucial information about the property owned by her husband. That's real direct or close to, real close to direct, but if not indirect, which is prohibited. Exhibit M of the respondent's 10-23 motion to dismiss. There's a May 17th, 23 letter to the Freedom of Information Commission that says, you know, we don't know. And that letter was written in concert with the husband. You know, as attorneys for the commission, in the hearing offices, they always check to see whether there's jurisdiction. I don't believe there's jurisdiction because the 2004 injunction by, I think it was Judge Robert J. Hale, prohibited direct or indirect contact, which this is. Whether, you know, whether the complainant's inquiry requests are deep, you know, constitute indirect contact by the complainant's husband, you know, it's a violation of the 2004 injunction. That was the issue raised by the respondents, and that is, in fact, the issue. Whatever gloss wants to be put on it, the FOI request is a violation of the 2004 injunction. You know, Gertrude Stein, her famous quote is, a rose is a rose is a rose. To paraphrase that, you know, a violation is a violation is a violation. And the complainant should not be able to benefit through a collateral attack using the Freedom of Information Act as a, and this commission as a stalking horse to obtain information that they could not otherwise receive because of a 24-year noncompliance with an injunction. I believe that the best way to do this, the most efficacious way, is to grant the motion to dismiss and, you know, change the hearing report to reflect that. That's all.
Thank you. I have a question for Attorney Molson. Attorney Molson, if another individual other than Ms. Ferricelli requested these same documents, would the commissioner have disclosed that information?
If it was the same exact situation, except for not the wife, is that what you're...
Yeah, no, Mr. Smith.
If it was the same exact situation and it wasn't his wife but another person, they would not have been disclosed because the order prohibits any indirect or direct communication.
No. I'm just asking you if a third party, unrelated to the person in the injunction, asked for these same records, would the records have been given to that third party?
A third party, yes.
Okay. So we know that the records are discoverable and they can be disclosed.
Yes, I'm sorry.
So the only reason they're not being disclosed is because this woman is married to this man who has an injunction against him.
In this case, they're not being disclosed to her not because she's married to him, but because she is trying to get the records on his behalf, is what our argument is. It's her acting indirectly for him. So she is acting on his behalf.
But if her next door neighbor, as I said, any third party asked for the same records, they would be disclosed.
If it was not on his behalf.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, this is Commissioner Hankins. So Attorney Mosley, from what I said.
I haven't finished, but go ahead.
I'm sorry.
That's okay, go ahead.
So, you know, sorry to cut everybody off, but if you're saying that if Deep had a reasonable apprehension that it was an indirect request, you would not grant that?
Correct.
All right.
I'd like to hear.
I want to finish my train of thought.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Since I didn't want to hear you, sir.
So, and I'll just extend my example, another hypothetical. If Mr. and Mrs. Farishelli had a son who asked for these records, they wouldn't be granted these records.
The son would not be granted the records if he was trying to get them on behalf of Mr. Farishelli.
Well, how did you prove that she's trying to get these records on behalf of? Did she admit it? Did she say,
"So
I'm getting these records from my husband"?
So there were a variety of different points that were brought out during the hearing, mm-hmm. on testimony, showing that there were documents where she conveyed that her husband was denied access to the documents. So she was trying to get the documents, that there was evidence presented that showed that she had submitted paperwork that came from her husband and herself, including letterhead, her statements in different documents referred to we often, which indicates her and her husband. One second, I just want. Yes, so there were a number of emails that went back and forth between her husband and herself, where she asked him for advice as to what she should print out, what she should not print out. In those emails, there were also a number of different conversations, just basically asking for his advice on how to proceed.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to hear from Attorney Mann.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Farish.
Sure.
I don't know if you were about to say I'd like to hear from Attorney Mann.
I did
say. But I would like to hear from Attorney Mann on his thoughts on whether he thought the wife was working on behalf of her husband. Thank you.
Thank you. Attorney Mann.
Thank you. So for the record, Kevin Mann, I'd like to hear an officer in this matter. So first, I think before just one preliminary issue. So the proposed final decision does not make a finding one way or the other whether it was indirect communication. Intentionally doesn't make a finding because, in my view, the commission doesn't have the authority in this circumstance to enforce an injunction against a non-party where the court has never found that Mrs. Farishelli was acting on behalf of Mr. Farishelli. The court has never even expounded on what would constitute an indirect communication. So for the commission in this case to find that this was an indirect communication, the commission would be the first body enforcing this order and be enforcing it against a person who is not subject to the order. So this admittedly was a complicated, procedurally complicated case. I looked everywhere I could find a comparable example, and I could not find a single example of a case where an administrative agency enforced a court order in the first instance against a non-party, someone who's not subject to the order, before the court had ever acted on that injunction. I'm not saying it's ever been done before, but I looked, I don't know if I would say I boiled the ocean, but I came pretty close to boiling the ocean to try to find anything I could find. I did not find a single example. So just as a preliminary matter, there's not a finding one way or the other. So beyond that, the evidence that was presented, there was some evidence that Mrs. Ferricelli was, obviously she was aware of the injunction, that she had spoken to her husband about the requests. There was the shared letterhead, the emails, the email that was mentioned from Mrs. Ferricelli to Mr. Ferricelli. My recollection is the only thing that email said was, do I need to print this? So she wasn't asking for substantive advice about how do I go about making this request? What records do I need to request? Is this the right wording to use? It was, do I need to print this? Mrs. Ferricelli was here, she testified. Again, I did not make a finding one way or the other as to whether she was acting on her husband's behalf, but she pretty convincingly explained her family has a longstanding ownership interest in this property. She personally has an interest in what's going on, the remediation that's been going on for 20 years on the neighboring property. She was pretty convincing that she personally, separate from her husband, has her own interest in what's going on.
Not that she needs a reason to request the records. Anybody can request the records, whether they have an interest in the property or not.
Right. But at the time of the hearing, because going into the hearing, I don't know how I'm going to come out. So I did want to probe, in the event that I thought that the conclusion was that the commission can enforce the order, the next step would be, is this a violation of the order? So I did probe a little bit and get her explanation. And, again, Mrs. Ferricelli pretty convincingly explained that, her family has owned this property for 70 years. So she has a legitimate reason to want to know what's going on the neighboring property. So again, I didn't go on to make that finding, but it's not, I can safely say it's not a slam dunk to show that Mrs. Ferricelli was absolutely acting on Mr. Ferricelli's behalf based on the evidence that was presented. The testimony from the respondents, the respondents testified that they didn't even consider Mrs. Ferricelli's own property interest or her own interest in the property in deciding whether this was an indirect communication. And to me, especially given how long she's had that interest in the property, I don't know how you could make a finding that she necessarily was acting on her husband's behalf without considering her longstanding property interest in the neighboring property. So again, the conclusion is, at least the proposed conclusion is, that the commission doesn't have the authority to enforce this court order, but if the commission disagrees with that conclusion, there still is the next step to make the factual findings of whether this was an indirect communication. And I, in my view, it's not, it's not a slam dunk to show that this was an indirect communication. as I understand the court order.
Thank you. Mr. Ferris, do you have any other questions for Attorney Munn?
No, thank you, Attorney Munn.
Thank you, Mr. Ferris.
Yes. Commissioner Streeter.
Yeah, Commissioner Streeter. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My own comments. I have trouble with the fact that there are public documents that public records that are basically being shielded by a 20-year-old injunction. It may have been renewed, but that it's the commissioner has decided that even if it's his wife or eventually his descendants, that this could be ad infinitum. It's going to go forever. Whereas I think it was explained by the complainant attorney that, they have tenants that live next door. Any of the tenants should be able to get public records. And it probably is much easier just to provide the public documents than to, take this on to a further appeal. But I understand that this is going to be, there's going to be an administrative order and it's going to go to a different level. But I just find it difficult that as far as our section of the law, that somebody's requesting records and they're being denied and that they're being denied these records based on, an injunction. And, I think that's where I have the trouble with this. I think that, if it was the wife or the son or a neighbor, especially since they've had this property at least more than 50 years prior to this injunction was put in. Based on the jurisdiction I think that we have, is that I would support the hearing officer's report, and then if it gets remanded back to us at some point because I think that's probably the proper jurisdiction for deciding whether it's a violation of injunction is a different court, not necessarily this commission here. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Counsel, did you wish to be heard? Just identify yourself.
Yes, of course. Again, this is Thomas Langle again on behalf of the complainant, Ms. Jean Ferricielli. There's just something that was also testified to that her tenants are concerned about pollution coming from, other areas here. So she's the landlord. They're the tenants. And so she owned this property, or her father and her did, prior to even the marriage. And now they have these tenants there that are longstanding tenants. So she's also voicing their concerns, not just because they're curious, but because you're talking about some damage that's happening. So it makes it even more of a public issue. And something that, again, very well said, the commissioner, Mr. Streeter, that this is a 16-year-old order, and when will it end? You have this policy on one side that you don't want to relitigate issues that are already well decided. And then you have res judicata, which is they have strict rules for adopting decisions in other courts into a new court. If it's a different standard, different parties. And that was a 2004 court, and this is an agency. So there's a different standard here. Here we're just looking for documents. Those cases were based on more legal issues. So I think it's apples and oranges. This is a new hearing that should be given, de novo consideration.
This is Commissioner Hankins.
Mr. Hankins.
Yeah, it's a 2004 court order, an injunction that's been tried to be overturned several times, I think four times, and it hasn't been. And the complainant's husband hasn't remediated the problem. And yes, the property was owned prior to the injunction, but there was an injunction that's been interposed between the ownership, and nothing's been done. And I don't think that you can have some sort of collateral attack to get things that you're not entitled to under court order.
I guess I take issue with collateral attack. The question is whether she's doing this indirectly for the benefit of her husband or not, and you're being given enough reason that she needs this information on her own because she owns the property. There's possible pollution. she doesn't need a reason to get the information, but she's got plenty of good reasons to get that information.
Police Commissioner Haggis, I think that without getting too far into the weeds, and I think this is going to be clarified by courts or whatever, but, you know, they're concerned because of the nature of the complainant's husband's actions, polluting this, causing this problem in the first place. And a collateral attack is the indirect requesting of this information that she's not allowed to otherwise, that he's not allowed to. So that's the collateral attack.
That's the key. He's not allowed right. to do it. She didn't have a day in court. She wasn't there I don't know whether she was there, but she wasn't a party to the hearing where the injunction was issued. Was she? Counsel? Was she counsel?
But that's what I mean by indirect.
No.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, just a word, you know, speaking to the hearing officer a little bit about this. If, assuming this were a collateral attack, as you phrased it, I think there was a remedy for the respondents to take, and that was to go to court to look to see whether the court viewed this as such and whether it was an indirect communication. And the respondents have not availed themselves of that opportunity, and they're asking us to interject ourselves. I know in their motion to dismiss, they're citing to a section of our statute that talks about dismissing an appeal when the agency hasn't violated the act or the agency has committed a technical violation. Just doesn't fit. Like, the motion to dismiss at this juncture doesn't fit what we do. I appreciate your remarks and where you're coming from, but I think right now our forum is not really designed to operate the way the respondents would like us to. As the hearing officer highlighted, we'd have to make these findings when it's really within the purview of the court to do so. And we need to look at our jurisdiction solely under the FOI Act. If there were a court order, maybe it'd be a different outcome.
I'm sorry, Mr. Farish, would you like to be heard?
No, I guess I would. I know I would support the hearing officer's report. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Attorney Lynch.
Thank you, Chairman. If I could just respond to Attorney Murphy's last comment. I mean, if there were a court order, there is a court order. And I agree, you know, that Mrs. Paricelli is not per se subject to the order. She's not under the jurisdiction of the court. So we didn't choose this forum. The complainant did. We put on a case saying, you know, she's basically acting as her husband, who is precluded by the valid and still enforceable court order and is precluded from correspondence with the agency. It seems complicated, but it's a little more straightforward. And I think Commissioner Hankins has hit the nail on the head with really how to tee this issue up and look at it with, we put on substantial evidence that clearly they were acting in conjunction. The property issue, frankly, I think is a red herring. That property has changed hands between the complainant and her husband a number of times. The pollution that they're supposedly worried about was caused by her husband. We're here representing the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. Clearly, the agency vested with statutory authority to protect the environment in Connecticut. So I frankly just take issue with that, given the history of this case. But to go back to the jurisdiction of the commission and the court, we're between a rock and a hard place here. Because if we'd gone to the court and had the court make a ruling, Mrs. Farricelli is not a party in that. So we'd have a ruling from the court that it is indirect. And then we'd come back and the commission would say, hey, we're the body empowered by statute in the first instance to examine complaints under the FOIC. And then you'd set up a sort of a separation of powers issue. Or I'm not sure exactly how you would have dealt with that now if you've got an order from a court over someone they don't necessarily have jurisdiction over who came to this commission. So that's a long way of me saying we're here because the complainant chose the forum. We defended our actions to the best of our ability here. If you want us to go to court, we're more than welcome or more willing to do that, as AAG Mosley said, to stay this a final decision here let us see what the court has to say. You can certainly take notice of that. We can have follow-on briefing to the extent you want that, but she chose this.
This is Commissioner Atkins.
One second. Commissioner Streeter.
Yes. Assistant Attorney, my thought is from this jurisdiction is that what harm would it have been to provide the documents to whether it's, you know, Mrs. Fercielli or her son or somebody else, if these are public documents that are available to the public, and then you take it to your issue as far as the fact that they're breaching this injunction to court and whatever remedy they have. I mean, their remedy would not be that, oh, they can't have the documents. It's the fact that they broke this injunction and there might be some other action or criminal type of action that's against them for violating that. But do you understand what I'm saying?
I'm not entirely clear. I mean, I guess to answer the first part of your question, what harm is there is that I think given sort of the history of this case, the nature of Mr. Fercielli's interaction with the department, the fact that this court order was issued because he propounded, because he was found to have harassed the agency, and part of that harassment was propounding 45 FOIA requests on the agency. It's a long way of me saying there's a long history there. And the sanctity and validity of the court order this case was litigated by the agency up to the Supreme Court back for years, and to just turn around and say, well, I know we've got a court order, but, you know, we think it's in violation, we're going to turn it over anyways, that just doesn't hold a lot of water.
That's fair. That's why I'm asking the question. Yeah. But it's also that.
I understand. It's weird. They're public documents. I get it. Had any neighbor requested them, we would have turned them over. But if a neighbor requested them and wrote to the commission, I'm requesting these documents because Mr. Fercielli can't get them. Whoa, that's what raises all the red flags for us. That's the indirect contact, and that's exactly what happened here. Not only did you have a relationship, a spousal relationship of 57 years, people who own property together, people who live together, people who clearly communicated together via email and obviously in the sort of normal course of their marriage, I think all that's in the record. But you had someone who wrote the commission and said, I'm requesting these documents because this person who I know is precluded from getting them can't. In the face of that, I mean, I don't know how you can sit here and say we can't find its indirect contact and violation of the court order. It's open and shut. The motion to dismiss should be granted.
One second, Commissioner Hankins.
Thank you. The phrase indirect in Judge Hale's 2004 injunction contemplates and covers a third party's interposing themselves to obtain this information that they're not allowed to get. So I'm in total agreement with a motion to dismiss. I don't think there's subject matter jurisdiction. I think we should respect a superior court order. And 2004, it's not stale. It's an equitable remedy. You know, they still haven't cured it, and they're still in clear violation of this. And they keep on trying to overturn it. And, you know, this Freedom of Information Commission doesn't act in a missile silo, doesn't operate out of one. You know, they contemplate, and it's mentioned in Attorney Munn's decision, you know, we look at other orders and statutes and things like that, and we should obey this 2004 injunction. It hasn't lessened its impact over the years.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Christian Hankins. Yes, Attorney Munn.
To speak on the point about the separation of powers concern, as the hearing officer and counsel to the commission, that the separation of powers concern is one of my concerns about the commission enforcing the order. So the court has the authority to enforce its own orders. The court has the authority to determine what is a violation of the order and what's not. The court has the authority to determine if there is a violation, what's the appropriate remedy. The commission doesn't have that authority, at least in my view and based on my research. So, there's a little bit of discussion of this in the proposed decision that even if the court were to find that this was an indirect communication, the court is not required to say, okay, then that means, Deep, you don't have to turn over the records. The court determines what's the appropriate remedy. The court may look at this situation and say, you know what, maybe this isn't an indirect communication, but at the time the order was entered, we didn't contemplate that Mrs. Faricelli has her own need for the documents. And so under these circumstances, it's equitable to allow her to have the documents. We don't know what the court would do. So even if it was proven that this was an indirect communication, it still doesn't answer the question of what's the appropriate remedy. And I think for the commission to jump in and make the findings and then not only make the findings, but then determine for the commission to determine what the appropriate remedy is, that raises separation of power concerns. And that was one of the concerns that I had in, you know, recommending this decision. So I just wanted to, I understand, again, I think procedurally this is a complicated case, and I understand there are concerns both ways, but the commission's jurisdiction is very limited. The FOI Act is very specific on what exemptions apply, when an exemption applies, and there's nothing in the FOI Act that would, that contemplates the commission taking, allowing an agency to withhold records under these circumstances. So I just wanted to make that clear.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just have one last thing. You know, I'm not going to make any bad faith allegations, but the resistance to giving these documents over to a property owner that has articulated a real reason why she would want the documents, what is the amount of resources that they have spent briefing this issue seems to me to be, it just makes me think that isn't FOIA supposed to be the free, you know, giving of information? I mean, she's articulated some very real consumer property interest reasons here, and the FOIA says not to look at the motive. So I think that, you know, the FOIA was not meant to be litigated to this extent over documents that relate directly to her property that she's owned for 70 years. It just wasn't meant to be like this. The amount of time and cost that we have to go through to get these documents, it just doesn't seem that FOIA had that in mind. So that's something I'd like to add. Thank you.
Does anyone else have any questions, comments? Commissioner Farish, anything?
No, thank you, Bill.
Okay. I'll say number one, excellent job, everyone who's argued this, and great job writing the decision, Attorney Munn. It's a difficult one, and I truly appreciate Commissioner Hankins. I always appreciate Commissioner Hankins, but he articulates good reasons as to why we should send this to Superior Court, but you know, it's difficult to make a decision. I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Gans, on my second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
No.
Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee, not there. Commissioner Ganswin?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
No.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes.
Is this for 42 and one abstention, right?
Yeah. Passes. So great job, everyone. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your
time so much. Thank
you all. The only case we have. So.
We're trying to move along quickly. We ain't done yet.
8 minutes away.
We have
15 more minutes.
But we have one very quick deal. No don't see Alicia here now, so I guess I'll report that the petition for cert in the Avon map was denied. And so that was the case where we ordered the disclosure of, oh, go ahead. I already told them it was denied, but I'm just saying what the case was.
Oh, okay.
This was for a record created by an employee of the department.
Right, it was a log created detailing events involving the chief of police over the course of 1 year and 4 months, so prior to the legal advice requested. And so the commission ruled that under Supreme Court case law, particularly Pursuit of Bisaghi, that the document wasn't privileged. And the Superior Court agreed, and the Avon plaintiffs took it to the appellate court, and the appellate court agreed with the commission that it wasn't privileged, and then they petitioned the Supreme Court to take another look, and in a sentence they said the petition for certification from the appellate court's decision is denied. So that would be the end of that. So it was a very...
Attorney McGee, who should be listening, she filed a very good opposition to that petition for cert.
Yes, she did. She did do that. And it's really only the second time I've seen the Supreme Court deny a petition for cert. And Attorney McGee opposed both of the cases where the petition for cert was denied. So she is now in charge of denials. Enjoy that. No, yeah, it's a great job.
Okay, and I think we'll go right to a legislative report. Paula's just back from her journeys abroad, so we'll let Russell take it here.
We're still sort of in the same place I think we were a couple weeks ago. Legislature's back in session. They are in session 3 days this week, and I think 3 days next week too, coming up on the adjournment the first week of May. So we're continuing to have meetings. We had some productive meetings last week, trying to raise our concerns, about the various bills. Trying to think if there's anything really more specific than that. Just, I think, as Commissioner Gansman has said a couple times, it is a short session. So I think that is, one advantage is that there's been a lot of discussion, in the committee on these bills, but, now they're only just starting to get on the radar of leadership and rank and file legislators. So, I think the more that we can advocate for our position and put a bug in people's ear and raise our concerns and get some questions, I think that's all been helpful. So, continuing to do that, and also just want to give a shout out to everyone who's been doing the bill tracking, because that is, again, not easy. And, it includes a lot of times where, they'll file a strike all amendment and there's all this substitute language. So now we've looked through the bill once and we're having to go through it again to see, the differences and the changes. And, we have a really great team that are keeping a close eye on that. So, stay tuned for what happens in the last couple of weeks. As you all know, it can get kind of crazy. So, we'll be keeping an eye on that.
We have about a dozen or so bills that were that we're seriously tracking, and that review process helps us uncover when bills were amended. And there's one particular one involving a court operations bill that we're looking at that, to our surprise, there's a provision in there that would change the FOI Act. References to where people have to file their appeals of decisions regarding petitions for relief against vexatious requesters. Instead of it potentially going to New Britain, the person can file in their in the court where they reside, essentially.
I don't think they'd want to do that.
And we're not sure exactly why this is in play right now. We feel that the court in New Britain, the Administrative Appeals Court, is the best place to handle really anything related to our matters because there's an expertise that's developed there. But so we're looking at that court operations bill. It just kind of appeared out of nowhere, at least from our perspective. So that's the kind of thing that we really keep a close eye on and why we do all this work. So
stay tuned. A couple of weeks from now, it will be coming to an end, one way or another. Right? Okay. Thanks, Russell. And no new business, unless somebody else has something they want to add.
Will we adjourn?
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'll take a roll call of those in favor of adjourning. Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Farish?
Yeah.
Commissioner Goldsby Wells?
Yes.
He's thinking.
We gotta go for another, like, 8 minutes.
Sir, yes?
Yes.
Mr. Ganswin?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. We're adjourned. Thank you all.
Good argument.
Good argument, everyone.
I have time.